Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages. Text number 15. Word meanings, yat, whose, pada, lotus feet, sangshaya, those who have taken shelter of, sutta, O Sutta Goswami, munaya, great sages, prashamayana, absorbed in devotion to the Supreme. Sadhya, at once, punanti, sanctify. Upasprishtaha, simply by association. Swarduni, of the sacred Ganges. Apa, water. Anusevaya, bringing into use. Yat pada sangshaya sutta, munaya prashamayana, sadhya punantyupasprishta, swardunya ponushevaya. Yat pada sangshaya sutta, munaya prashamayana, sadhya punantyupasprishta, swadunya ponusevaya. Yat pada sangshaya sutta, munaya prashamayana, sadhya punantyupasprishta, swardunya ponusevaya. Translation. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Pure devotees of the Lord are more powerful than the waters of the sacred river Ganges. One can derive spiritual benefit out of prolonged use of the Ganges waters, but one can be sanctified at once by the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that any person, regardless of birth, as Shudra, woman, or merchant, can take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, and by so doing can return to Godhead. To take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord means to take shelter of the pure devotees. The pure devotees, whose only business is serving, are honored by the names Prabhupada and Vishnupada, which indicate such devotees to be representatives of the lotus feet of the Lord. Anyone, therefore, who takes shelter of the lotus feet of a pure devotee by accepting the pure devotee as his spiritual master can be at once purified. Such devotees of the Lord are honored equally with the Lord because they are engaged in the most confidential service of the Lord. For they deliver out of the material world the fallen souls whom the Lord wants to return home back to Godhead. Such pure devotees are better known as vice lords, according to revealed scriptures. The sincere disciple of the pure devotee considers the spiritual master equal to the Lord, but always considers himself to be a humble servant of the Lord. This is the pure devotional path. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditamena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Today's verse is about the representatives of the Lord. The first word in the verse is yat, which means whose, and pada, lotus feet. The who, the yat there refers to Krishna. We're in a series of verses glorifying Krishna. The sages want to know about Krishna. That's there. Of course, there are six questions in the first chapter, and pretty much they have to do with Krishna. And one of them, they want to know about Krishna's incarnations, Krishna's activities, and so on. So we've been reading a series of verses glorifying Krishna. Like the last verse, it said that if one chants Krishna's name, even unconsciously, then one can become free from all fear. Apana samsritim gauram. Actually, that verse is... There's that interesting statement in that verse about unconsciously chanting. So you think, well, how can you chant unconsciously? Of course, I guess we all do, don't we? We're chanting our japa sometimes. But the Sanskrit word is vivasha. So the word vasha actually means control or force. There's a nice example of this in the Goswami prayers. Radha kunda tate kalinda tanaya tire cha vangshi vate premon mala vashad ashesha dashaya grasto paramato sada. It says that the Goswamis were always under the control of premon mala, the madness of prema. So the idea here with vivasha, it seems to me the words are, it's connected. V is just an intensifier, specifier. It's a particular kind of vasha. So it can mean it's not really in your control. Now, was it in Prabhupada's this purport? I can't remember if I saw it some other place. Prabhupada said, either unconsciously or by force of circumstance. So, and it's sometimes the circumstance, you might say, forces you to chant Krishna's name. Just like we try to, it's a nice habit to get into when something happens, you're startled or you say, Krishna. So that's by you can say by force of circumstance. I know I'm in the habit whenever I sneeze, I always say Hare Krishna after. So by force of circumstance, it just kind of comes out. So that I think that's part of the idea here. But that just sort of automatically, you chant Krishna's name because maybe you're used to doing it. So in any case, that was the verse was about glorifying Krishna, because pointing out how amazing, how powerful his name is. Even if you say his name, just sort of automatically it comes out, you become free from all fear just by that. So today's verse, it seems like it's about, well, it is. It's about the pure devotees, but why are they pure devotees? Because Sangshaya, they've taken shelter, yet Pada, his lotus feet. So it's also glorification of Krishna. They're glorious because they've taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Now, of course, what does it say? It says that these devotees, those who come in touch with them, these devotees, those who come in touch with the sages, they can become purified very quickly, quicker than the Ganges can do. Now, as soon as I heard this, I thought, well, they're purified because they're in touch with the lotus feet of Krishna, but isn't the Ganges in touch with the lotus feet of Krishna? In fact, we find lots of this kind of thing. I see in the Bhagavatam where, well, it's really the idea is a point is being made here, and don't quibble with it. Just accept the point that's being made. Don't be like me and overthink it. Just say, yeah. And in fact, sometimes I think the same way. There are several places where it talks about the devotees, how glorious they are. They're even more glorious than Lakshmi Devi. And you think, oh, wait a minute. Isn't Lakshmi Devi a devotee? So the point is made, it's trying to glorify the devotee. Even Lakshmi Devi, who's so close to Krishna, but still the devotees are so great. Even in comparison to her, they're great. Krishna says to Uddhava that you're greater than Lakshmi and Shiva and all the others. Actually, there's another way of looking at it in the context of Lakshmi, which I came across, is that there are, for example, it says in one place that Krishna, I think Prithu Maharaj, there's an interesting section in Prithu Maharaj when he's offering his prayers to Lord Vishnu, and he says, I want to serve your lotus feet, but I'm afraid there may be some competition there because Lakshmi's already serving your lotus feet, so maybe we're going to get into each other's way. We're both trying to serve your lotus feet. But then he says, actually, it's probably, I don't think I have to worry because you really don't care about Lakshmi Devi. Essentially, is what he says. Now, I've seen somewhere that the idea, because it comes up in a few places where Krishna doesn't care for Lakshmi. But there's a place that says even Lord Brahma is trying to get the blessings of Lakshmi Devi. Now, whether that's true or not, I may be either just making a point. But the idea is that there's more than one Lakshmi. There's a Lakshmi who's Krishna's eternal consort, part of his internal Shakti. And then there's a Lakshmi who's involved with the material world. She gives material benedictions. There's a Lakshmi who gives spiritual benedictions, and there's a Lakshmi who gives material benedictions. So generally, people in this world, when they want the blessings of Lakshmi, you know, they have the picture of Lakshmi with coins sometimes coming out of her hands. So that's the Lakshmi that they're interested in. And Krishna's not interested. Krishna is one of his opulences is that he's the most renounced. So he's most renounced because he doesn't need to get gold from Lakshmi Devi. He doesn't need to get the blessings of Lakshmi Devi. So in any case, I wanted to make this point that this verse, it comes in a kind of a line of verses glorifying Krishna. And it's also glorifying Krishna by glorifying his devotees and saying that they're greater even than the Ganges. Now, one Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, he raises this question: well, how can they be greater than? How can they purify better than the Ganges? I don't know if I said Lakshmi as Ganges, and he says that with the Ganges, if you see the Ganges, then you get purified. Just by seeing the Ganges, of course, also touching the Ganges, but by seeing. But he says, simply remembering the devotee, you don't even have to see the devotee. Even if you just remember the devotee, you'll become purified. And Sridhar Swami, he also makes some comment on this. He says, formerly the Ganges was considered foremost of holy places. Formerly means before this was going on, the sages of Naimisharanya were meeting about 5,000 years ago. And Shaunaka Rishi is glorifying Suta Goswami and saying this, making this point. So Sridhar says, formerly Ganga was considered foremost of holy places, but after Krishna's appearance, the holy place of his glorification made her insignificant. So Krishna came. Now one of the reasons Krishna came, Kunti Devi says in her prayers, or at least she implies in her prayers, that Krishna is coming to do pastimes so that people can speak about those pastimes and become purified, or remember those pastimes and become purified. So this is the point Sridhar Swami is making, that yes, the Ganges was was famous as the greatest place of pilgrimage, but actually just remembrance of the Lord, especially by hearing from the great devotees, or glorification of the Lord by Lord Krishna specifically, after he came, then the purification of the Ganges is insignificant in comparison. Now, there's another comparison between the sages and or the pure devotee and the Ganges. There's one song we have, Evara Karanu Koro Vaishnava Gosai. So there's the two lines in that song, Gangara Parasha Hoile Paschati Pavan Darshane Pavitra Koro E Tomaragun. One becomes purified after bathing in the waters of the sacred Ganges many times, but just the sight of you purifies the fallen souls. This is your great power. That song is all about the pure devotee, how merciful they are. In this purport, something that struck me when I read this is Prabhupada, this sentence that he says, pure devotees are better known as vice lords according to revealed scriptures. So I kept trying to think, is there a Sanskrit word that would mean vice lords? And I can't think. I mean, devotees are sometimes glorified as deva, and deva, of course, means god or godly. So in that sense, namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine. So this is a common thing. But I was thinking maybe what Prabhupada was thinking of more was that maybe there's not a specific word for that, but that's the function that they serve, like vice lord, because they're representing. You know, when, of course, in Prabhupada, during the British rule of India, they had viceroys. So what is a viceroy? A viceroy means representative of the roy. Roy means king. I suspect that this word comes from Raja. Raja, Raya. Just like we have Ramananda Rai, I suspect that that comes from Raja. And Roy probably also comes. Okay, everything, so many things trace back to Sanskrit. So viceroy means this person is a stand-in for the king, you can say, in India. In other words, the king is sitting in England, but the king is expanding, in a sense, as the viceroy, who's the king, you might say, situated in India. So that viceroy has just the same power, is fully empowered by the king to perform the same functions as the king. So that's the idea here, Prabhupada says. Such pure devotees are better known as viceroys according to revealed scriptures. The sincere disciple of the pure devotee considers the spiritual master equal to the Lord, but always considers himself a humble servant of the Lord. This is the pure devotional path. So this is the idea with the viceroy, Lord's representative. Now there's one further thing. When I read this comparison with the Ganges, there's a beautiful verse in the second chapter, second verse of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila. You know, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the beginning of each chapter, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami composes a verse, at least one verse. And the verse on this, I don't know the first verse of the second chapter, but the idea of it is it's something about even someone who's completely unqualified can get the benefits of mining the ocean of truth, something like that. That's the verse. And then the second verse is one that I've memorized. Let's see if I still remember it. Krishnot kirtana gana nartana kala pato jani brajita sad bhakta vali hansa chakra madupa shreni viharaspadam karnananda kala dvanir bahatume jiva maru prangane Sri Chaitanya Dayani Deta Valasal Lila Sudaswarduni. By the way, this meter, I mentioned this before, this is the same meter as the Goswami Ashtaka. Goswami Ashtaka. It's called Sardula, is it Sardula Vikritita? I think that's the word. It means the play of the lion. It has that nickname. It's considered to be a play of a little lion cub running around. Krishna kirtana gana nartana kala pato jani brajita. The play of the lion. Incidentally, that's the same meter as the first two verses of the Bhagavatam. If you've ever tried to chant those verses and you can't figure out what's the meter, they're the same meter. Janma yasya yaton vayadita ratas chate shabhigyaswara. And the second one, dharma projita kaita votrapanamo nirmatsaranam satan. So they're the same meter. So I know the Sanskrit for this verse, but I don't know the English. Actually, I find it's much easier to learn Sanskrit, memorize Sanskrit than English. Actually, there's a reason for this, and that's because of the meter. And also sometimes, of course, there's rhyme. So it makes it's a mnemonic device. You know, mnemonic device means something that helps you remember. I came across this just the other night, actually. I was starting to read the Damodar Leela in the Bhagavatam, with Prabhupada's commentary and other commentaries. And Prabhupada, right in the beginning, maybe the first verse, well, I don't remember if it's the first verse, but one of the first verses talks about Mother Yashoda was churning milk, and she was singing Krishna's pastimes. And Prabhupada says that either devotees would compose songs. I was thinking of Dravida Prabhu when I read this, how he likes to put everything in poetry. So he said this was a tradition that devotees would do in the past, not only devotees, but anyway, if they wanted to remember something, they would put it in poetry because it's easier to remember that way. So either a person would do it themselves or they would hire a poet. If maybe they didn't have good poetic skill themselves. They would hire somebody. I want to remember Krishna's leelas, so can you put them in poetry? So Mother Yashoda she had them memorized in poetic form, and she was singing Krishna's pastimes while she was churning the milk. So a nice thing to do. So that's why I think, at least for myself, it's even my earliest days in Krishna consciousness, I started learning verses. But I didn't tend to learn the English so much. It tends to be easier to learn the Sanskrit than the English. So anyway, here's the English to this verse that I recited from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the translation. I'm talking about this because it's just metaphor using the Ganges. It says, O my merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectarian Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. It has the word Swarduni. That's one of Ganga Devi's names, Swarduni. That was also in today's verse. Swarduni of the sacred Ganges. So this is the metaphor. My tongue is parched, talking about things in this world. Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nuninam Santi Sahasrasha Apasyatam Atmatattvam Griheshu Griyamedinam. In the beginning, when Shukadeva Goswami begins speaking, second canto, first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first he glorifies Parikshit Maharaj for asking a good question. Vadiyani Shite Prashna. Your Prashna, your question is glorious because it has to do with atmavit, what is really valuable, what is beneficial for everyone. Then in the next verse, he says, Shrotavyadini Rajendra, O King, people have sahasrashaha. Prabhupada translates this as hundreds and thousands of things to talk about. They don't ask about these, the important questions. Of course, what is the essence of Parikshit's questions? How should I live? And especially, how should I live? What should I do now that death is closing in on me? So this is the important question, but people have so many other things to talk about. Sahasrara means thousand, or Sahasrara of thousands and thousands. And I was thinking today, we certainly have koti koti, millions and millions. You live in a village, how many things do you have to talk about, you know? But if you're living in the internet age, the whole world is available for you to talk about in our global village. So there are so many things to distract us from what we should really be talking about. So in this, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in this glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, my tongue is parched because of talking about the things of this world. But he says, may the nectarian Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. And then he can, beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers. So at first we have the water flowing on our desert-like tongue. And beautifying the water is the singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name. So the flowers are there in this form, or these things are there in the form of flowers. Kirtan, chanting, dancing. And these are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. So we think of it as a river, flowing, beautiful, soothing river with beautiful lotus flowers of Harinam, Sankirtan, and the devotees are there. That's where the devotees enjoy. They enjoy in those waters. These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. So that's how they're enjoying on those waters. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. So not only is it soothing because it's water, nectarian water, it's nectar, flowing nectar, but it also makes a beautiful sound. I probably used to give the example, gold is nice, but just to think if gold had a nice fragrance too, then it would be even better. So soothing water is nice, but you go to the ocean, it doesn't smell so good. Actually, as you're approaching it, sometimes you think, oh, what's that smell? And you realize, oh, that's just the ocean. Maybe it's dead fish or whatever, you know. Oh, you see on the shore millions and millions and millions of living entities, you know, their skeletons are there. But this is a nice fragrant. Actually, I want to read Prabhupada's purport, a couple of paragraphs. It's very nice and instructive. He says, our tongues are always engaged in vibrating useless sounds that do not help us realize transcendental peace. It's interesting that we probably use the word peace. You might think transcendental knowledge or enlightenment, but peace, because after we're searching for peace, and we want our soul, our innermost selves to be peaceful, satisfied. The tongue is compared to a desert because a desert needs a constant supply of refreshing water to make it fertile and fruitful. Water is the substance most needed in the desert. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics. Now here Prabhupada goes through a list. We get transient pleasure from these things. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on, is compared to a mere drop of water because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. I thought that was an interesting line. Huh? Even these things have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure. That seems to imply that the idea here is that all pleasure is actually real pleasure is in Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. Ladini Shakti. It's all coming from the Ladini Shakti. So even mundane pleasure, it's of course perverted, but its source is in Krishna. So it has that quality, whatever pleasure we experience in this world, it's a hint of real spiritual pleasure. Otherwise there wouldn't be any taste at all, any water. It's only a drop, but it's water in a sense. That's the idea. What is that? That prophet would often quote that. Can't think of it right now. Anyway. I'll go on here. Therefore, neither collectively nor individually can they, he's talking about these topics, can they satisfy the vast requirements of the desert-like tongue. Despite crying in various conferences, therefore, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. For this reason, people from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are compared to swans swimming around the beautiful lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or bees humming around his lotus feet in transcendental pleasure, searching for honey. Prabhupada always inserts these interesting words, doesn't he? Despite crying in various conferences. Now, why are they crying? Because they can't solve their problems. You might say that's why they're crying. They come together to solve the problem, but they can't solve the problem. Like Prabhupada told that person, you know, they were having this peace conference, they're inviting Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, there will never be peace. Write it down in your notebook. The person was apparently taking notes. You can write that down in your notebook. You will never get peace that way. So they're crying in their conferences. And then what does Prabhupada say? People from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you're in your conference and you can't solve the problem. Call for, you know, get your cell phone out. Of course, you can have a video. You can bring the devotee in video conference too into your conference room. Only devotees can solve the problems. Because they're swans swimming around the beautiful lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or bees searching for the honey of the lotus of the Lord's transcendental feet. This is a common metaphor that we have. Because Krishna's feet are compared to lotuses, and there are always bees around Krishna. So they're trying to get the honey of Krishna's lotus feet. Besides the flower garlands that he wears, but everything about him is a lotus. There's that in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, it talks about how many lotuses there are on Krishna. So he's full of lotuses. So the bees are always there trying to get the honey. So we'll continue with Prabhupada's purport here. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman. There's more crying. You know, there's a verse about pitied by the pitiable. Pitied by the pitiable. So the material, that means the materialist is pitied. By whom? The Brahmavadis, the impersonalists. But they're also pitiable by the devotees. So the impersonalist is pitied by the pitiable, pitied by those who are also pitiable, those who cry for Brahman. This probably refers to it here. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman, liberation, and similar dry speculative objects. The urge of the soul proper is different. The soul can be solaced only by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his many bona fide devotees, who never leave the lotus feet of the Lord to become imitation Mahaprabhus, but all cling to his lotus feet like bees and never leave a honey-soaked lotus flower. Prabhupada's wonderful poetry. Lord Chaitanya's movement of Krishna consciousness is full of dancing and singing about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. It is compared herein to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotus flowers. The enjoyers of these lotus flowers are the pure devotees who are like bees and swans. They chant like the flowing of the Ganges, the river of the celestial kingdom. That's probably actually the source of the Swardhuni, meaning the Ganges that flows in the heavenly planets. So we know, of course, there are different. Ganga flows throughout the universe. So there's Ganga on the heavenly planets, Swarloka. The author, Krishnadas Kaviraj, desires such sweetly flowing waves to cover his tongue. He humbly compares himself to materialistic persons who always engage in dry talk from which they derive no satisfaction. If they were to use their dry tongues to chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as exemplified by Lord Chaitanya, they would taste sweet nectar and enjoy life. That's the end of Prabhupada's purport. So, of course, this is encouragement to us to understand that by chanting and hearing mundane topics, actually, there are many heavy verses about this in the Bhagavatam and also by others. I know Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says any mundane sound you hear is just completely a waste of time. Just don't do it. So, of course, it's very difficult. Maybe it's not difficult in principle, but it's difficult in practice because we're surrounded with it. And because we have other interests besides hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita. So therefore we're given these instructions. Don't think you're going to get your thirst quenched by indulging, imbibing these other liquids, liquors. Actually, Narottam Das Thakur says karma kanda and jnana kanda, which means hearing other things besides bhakti. He says they're like vishera bandha, pots of poison. Amita bulya yevakai. I think they're nectar and I drink them and I'm just poisoning myself. So that's the lesson to be learned, that you're not getting any benefit from it, even though it may be temporarily scintillating. It's not ultimately a value. The real value comes from drinking the nectarian Ganges water, which emanates from the lotus feet of the Lord, or the Ganges water of the Krishna Katha, the pure devotees of the Lord, glorifying the Lord's lotus feet. So the verse, I'll read the verse again. Yatpara sanshaya sutta munaya prashamayana sadhya punantyu pasprishta swardunyapo nusevaya. O sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them. Whereas the waters of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. Interestingly, when I looked up this, you know, I mentioned before there's a Sanskrit dictionary, sanskritdictionary.com is what it's called. So I go there sometimes to look for things. So I looked up this Swarduni, and the only place it came up was in Prabhupada's books. In one other place, there's something called word search, I think, which does one of these diagrams with different words, and it had a whole list of words, and it had Janavi and, you know, different names, and Ganga was just one of the lists of words. But apparently it's not, I don't know, maybe it's not, the word doesn't seem to be there in Monier Williams' dictionary, because ordinarily that would come up. So there are quite a few words that this I come across this pretty regularly. The only, because they have several different Sanskrit dictionaries that they cite, and Prabhupada's is one of them. And not Prabhupada's dictionary, but Prabhupada's books. So it happens pretty regularly that some word that we use a lot, it doesn't come up anywhere else except in the Bhagavatam. I remember Gopi Pranadanta making this point about this is one of the unique features of the Bhagavatam, that it has some of its own words that you don't find anywhere else. Krishna's revealing sides of himself that aren't visible anywhere else. All right. Vikram Prabhu.
Hari Bhav. When the Ganges came from the spiritual world, it stated that it divided into four branches. Mm-hmm. But we don't often hear about the other branches. We just hear about the Ganges. But there are four. I think there's Alakananda.
Well, maybe there are four that we know of today. But I think those are still present. But in fact, there are seven. Shrota comes up in one verse. I forget the word. Shrota, it means it divided into seven. Because the seven sages, each wanted to have their own branch. So there are actually seven branches of the Ganges. Maybe they're not all visible today. But only one of them is flowing through India visibly. The other ones, I don't know, maybe they went underground because it's Kali Yuga.
You gave so many nice references to the Ganga, but you didn't mention Queen Kunti, and I'm sure you know the Sanskrit. I don't. But she was praying to the Lord, let my mind be attracted to you.
Gange Vaugam Udanvati. May my attraction be drawn to you just as the Ganges flows uninterrupted to the sea, something like that.
Without being diverted to anyone else.
Yeah. So who can stop the Ganges? Of course they're trying. Like they're stopping the Yamuna. The Yamuna doesn't make it past Mass Delhi. Anyway, that analogy is there. Just as the Ganges flows so powerfully to the sea, Kunti Devi is saying, may my attraction flow to you. Yes, someone else? Oh, okay.
You know, you were talking about Mother Lakshmi and her, you know, how qualified she is. So I remember when I was going to prepare for class, I was thinking about who was more qualified, Sukadev Goswami, or to speak the Bhagavatam, or Maharaj Parikshit to speak the Bhagavatam. So I kind of started thinking, I get confused and I stopped. So I was thinking of Sukadev Goswami being born from Vyasadev, who is a material qualitative incarnation of the Lord. But Maharaj Parikshit, he had personal darshan of the Lord protecting him within the womb, who was Krishna himself, the personality of God at the head of all incarnations. So he had that darshan and that protection. So even though by Krishna's arrangement, Sukadev Goswami spoke to Bhagavatam and he was the listener, but he was also so qualified.
Yeah, Prabhupada makes the point that they're equally qualified. You might say that in one sense, either of them could have spoken. Of course, there's also the social role, well, the whole story of Pariksha Maharaj, why he's the one who's hearing. And there's a social role, you know, the traveling Paramahamsa is naturally the person who's going to speak to the lowly king Grihastha. So that's the way it would work, generally. Yes, Nandini Kishore?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Prabhu, you said that there is spiritual world Lakshmi and material world Lakshmi. Is that the one that comes out of Samudra Manthan? Is that the material world?
Comes out of what?
Samudra Manthan, churning of the ocean.
Oh, comes out of the ocean. That could be. Yeah, I don't know for sure. Rama, although she does join with Vishnu in that Leela. So it's hard to say. That whole pastime is so, you know, the churning of the milk ocean. Because we even hear, you know, all these genealogies that we hear, for example, that Dhanvantari, his parent, his father, at least his father, a lot of times the mother's not mentioned, but his father, you know, in this list of, and his son was him, and his son was, and so on. So there's one where it place says where, and his son was Dhanvantari, you know, the incarnation of the Lord. And you think, wait a minute, I thought he came out of the ocean of milk. What is it? Why does he have? So I don't know how all these things work. It's really hard to.
Do they have different names, those Lakshmis, and what was your reference to that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just came across one reference by one of the Acharyas that made this point, that there's a material Lakshmi and a, you know, spiritual Lakshmi.
And the second thing you said is the Ganges passes as seven branches. What is the reference? Because then it gets divided into four on the Meru Mountain and. There are different names mentioned, Mandakini.
I'm trying to remember the context of it. In fact, if you do a search of the Veda base and you look up the Sapta Shrota, I'm pretty sure that's the phrase, Sapta Shrota, and it comes actually in a translation. I don't remember where it is exactly, but you could probably find it if you search for that. The seven sages, they each wanted their own Ganges. They didn't want to bathe together for some reason.
Also, you said Swarkaduli. What's the other name of Ganges you used? Swaraduli or Swarkaduli? The other name of Ganges you have been using?
Swarduni? Yeah, that was in today's verse. Svardhuni. So Swart, I'm thinking, well, Swargaloka. Because I think when I saw it online, it mentioned something, maybe Prabhupada mentions, the Ganges that flows in the heavenly planets. Is specifically called Swarduni.
Thank you very much.
All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.